Hello, it is Thursday, July 2nd. Welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Andrew Jung. Lawmakers looking into the ballot paper shortages during the June 3rd elections confirmed that ballot boxes were poorly managed after an on-site inspection. More on that in today's news briefing shortly. On our in-depth segment, we delve into South Korea's disappointing performance at the World Cup and controversies surrounding the now ex-coach Hong Myung-bo and the KFA. Plus, we go to Korea House in central Seoul to talk about a Korean traditional tea and sweets ceremony program called Hohoje for today's Explore Korea. Korea 24 starts now. Members of a special parliamentary committee looking into the ballot paper shortages during the June 3rd local elections have confirmed that ballot boxes were poorly managed, among other issues. To give us the latest on the committee's findings and as well as some of our other headlines of the day, we have with us in the studio our KBS World News editor, Koo Hee-jin. Hello, Hee-jin.
Hello, Andrew.
So the committee members on Thursday were finally able to enter the premises of the SK Olympic Handball Gymnasium, a facility in Seoul's Jamsil area used as a ballot counting center during the elections. What did they find?
Well, the members of the committee made the disclosure that they made a 15-minute on-site investigation confirming the status of the ballot boxes. They later cordoned off the area to preserve the evidence. Democratic Party lawmaker Kim Yong-man said that storing ballot papers in a room without closed-circuit TV cameras was unacceptable and argued that the ballot boxes should be moved to a secure location. Committee members criticized the National Election Commission and some even called for a special counsel investigation and a review of a possible recount through a parliamentary resolution.
They were able to access the area 27 days after protesters set up a blockade to prevent officials from removing ballot boxes from the counting station.
Right. The members had arrived near the SK Olympic Handball Gymnasium at around noon and were briefed on the demonstrators whose protests centered on allegations of election rigging related to the ballot shortage controversy. Accompanied by the police, the members entered the gymnasium at 1:11 p.m. and the committee members confirmed the presence of some 2.5 billion ballots and 380 ballot boxes from the Songpa area, along with voting registers and ballot counting records that had been secured there and checked the closed circuit TV camera status and the locks on the entryway.
Let's look at some of the other headlines. Samsung, SK Hynix, biopharmaceutical company Celltrion, and other businesses have pledged an investment package for the central Chungcheong region worth 392 trillion won, or around 252 billion U.S. dollars, in semiconductors, displays, secondary batteries, parts, and biotech. Hee-jin, can you give us the details of these plans?
Well, the pledges were announced during the government's public briefing in Asan, South Chungcheong province on Thursday, as part of an envisioned plan to develop next-generation cutting-edge industries in the central region. Samsung plans to inject 140 trillion won into fabs for products including OLED and next-generation displays, while SK Hynix promised to invest 100 trillion won and Celltrion is expected to spend 2 trillion won to build their facilities.
And President Lee Jae-myung, who was on hand, hailed the announcement, saying the central Chungcheong region holds immeasurable growth potential and can become a global hub of innovation in the era of artificial intelligence with strategic corporate investment and a firm government commitment.
Right. At the public briefing, Lee said the region boasts an ecosystem comprising four cutting-edge industries considered key strategic business areas for the country's future, which is the semiconductor, displays and secondary batteries and biotech sectors. Let's listen to what he had to say.
If corporate strategic investment and the government's strong commitment come together, the Chungcheong region will undoubtedly rise to become not just the center of South Korea's advanced industries, but a world-class hub of innovation leading the AI era.
He promised to mobilize all available means to actively support the businesses in fostering cutting-edge industries there in the interest of balanced regional development. He proclaimed that the region has sparked a paradigm shift.
In other business news, a new U.S. House Judiciary Committee report claims the South Korean government has engaged in economic discrimination against innovative American companies, including the e-commerce giant Coupang. The South Korean Ministry of Foreign Affairs has denied the accusations and called the report's publication regrettable. What's the latest?
Well, the U.S. House Judiciary Committee said in a report released Wednesday that Seoul's discriminatory acts against American businesses span several years, including coercive investigative tactics. It also pointed to overly burdensome regulatory requirements and massive fines and penalties intended to punish American firms and make it harder for them to compete effectively against South Korean companies. It highlighted that the recent treatment of Coupang, the U.S.-based e-commerce giant known as the Amazon of South Korea, as a prime example. The report said Coupang has been a consistent target and that hostility towards the company escalated in 2025 after a limited amount of customer data was stolen by a disgruntled former employee.
And we should point out that according to the South Korean government, the breach affected over 37.5 million people. How has the government responded to the report?
Well, the South Korean Foreign Ministry spokesperson Park Il responded at a briefing on Thursday, saying it is regrettable that the report reflects only Coupang's assertions. Park said the government is upholding its commitments under the Korea-U.S. joint fact sheet to treat American digital companies in a non-discriminatory manner and will continue to communicate with the U.S. on the issue.
Meanwhile, the nation's consumer prices surged by the biggest margin in 2.5 years in June amid soaring global oil prices stemming from the war in Iran. Heejin, can you break down the figures for us?
Well, the Ministry of Data and Statistics announced Thursday that the consumer price index increased 3.2% from the previous year, the highest jump since December 2023. It's also the second straight month in which the index has posted an on-year increase above 3%. Petroleum led the gains at 24.7%, the largest increase since July 2022, and the index for daily necessities went up 3.4%, the biggest increase since April 2024.
And the benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index plunged 7.89% on Thursday on investor jitters over surplus chip capacity. Heejin, can you give us the closing figures?
Well, the KOSPI tumbled 655.32 points to close at 7,648.09 on Thursday, as investors sold off semiconductor shares following reports that U.S. company Meta Platforms would put up for sale its artificial intelligence infrastructure. Reports that Apple is in discussions with Chinese companies about sourcing chips also weakened the sentiment in South Korean chip giants Samsung Electronics and SK Hynix, coupled with the U.S. stocks falling overnight. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ lost 62.63 points, or 6.74%, to close at 866.72.
And finally, a civic group has filed a complaint against Korea Football Association President Chung Mong-gyu and former head coach of the men's national football team Hong Myung-bo after South Korea failed to advance to the round of 32 at the 2026 FIFA World Cup. What do we know?
Well, in a press conference held in Seoul on Thursday, the People's Welfare Countermeasure Committee said it filed a complaint against Chung, Hong, and Im Seng, who had served as a technical executive at KFA, with the Seoul Metropolitan Police Agency. The group accused the three men of committing coercion, intimidation, obstruction of business, and breach of trust. The group said Hong had brought about pain accompanied by coercion and threats to the national team players without offering any tactics or strategy in the 2026 World Cup, insulting the South Korean people. The group claimed that in 2024, Chung and Yi had appointed Hong to take the helm of the national team despite violating regulations and opposition within the KFA.
We'll get to the bottom of this issue shortly in our next in-depth news analysis. But for now, that's it for our news briefing today. Heejin, thank you.
Thank you, Andrew.
The South Korean men's national football team aimed to reach the round of 16 at the 2026 World Cup, but the team was eliminated early at the group stage, sparking outrage, frustration, and disappointment in the country. Following the country's premature exit from the tournament, head coach Hong Myung-bo came under heated public scrutiny and resigned in disgrace. But despite Hong's resignation, the Korea Football Association has increasingly become the focus of criticism. There has been a growing chorus of calls for significant reform in the association. President Lee Jae-myung has waded into this public debate. He ordered the Ministry of Culture, Sports and Tourism to investigate the country's poor World Cup showing, saying he was, quote, utterly baffled by the results. To delve into these issues, we have two guests joining us on the line. First, we have sports reporter Yoo Ji-ho from Yonhap News. Hello, Ji-ho.
Hi.
And we also have Professor Kim Yoo-gyum from the Department of Physical Education at the Seoul National University. Hello, Professor Kim.
Hello.
South Korea had aimed to reach the round of 16, so that would mean it had aimed to reach the second stage of the knockout stage at the World Cup, but it failed to advance to the round of 32. Ji-ho, could you give us a rundown of how previous Team Korea squads have done at World Cups, and why is the South Korean public up in arms about this year's results?
Sure. Well, you know, Korea had reached the knockouts on three prior occasions, most recently back in 2022 in Qatar when they beat Portugal in the final group stage match to get into the round of 16, where they lost to Brazil, but it was a pretty valiant run to the knockouts. And 2010 in South Africa also went to the round of 16. And of course, who can forget the run to the semifinals in 2002? Now for this year, you know, head coach Hong Myung-bo even, you know, said before one of those earlier games that, you know, he was a member of the team back in 2002 that went to the semifinals. In fact, he was the captain, and he said he hoped this year's squad would actually, you know, get to the semifinals as well and break all the records that were set 24 years ago. And obviously, they didn't come close to doing that. You know, when you look at the draw from December last year, I think there was a lot of optimism. You know, Korea ended up with Mexico, South Africa, and a European playoff qualifier, which ended up being Czechia, when a lot of people would have thought that Denmark were going to maybe qualify out of that group. So, you know, there was no top 10 country, no traditional heavyweight. And I think it was pretty easy to picture Korea finishing at least in second place in this group. And you could make reasonable arguments that Korea maybe could have even won the group because, you know, just September last year, Korea had a pretty good match against Mexico, led them 2-1 and gave up their late equalizer sort of in the last seconds. They really could have won the match as well. So, you know, reasonable people could have made that argument that Korea would be favored to win this group. But obviously, you know, Korea didn't deliver on their promise. Had a pretty good start to the tournament, though, beating Czechia 2-1. But they did not score again in the next two matches, losing to Mexico 1-0 and also by the same score to South Africa, a team that really Korea should have defeated. And they were really favored, heavily favored to beat. Now, obviously, in the aftermath, Hong resigned. And I think a lot of detractors of his hiring in the first place from 2 years ago say that this team was doomed to fail from the beginning just because he was in charge. Hmm. You know, he's never been a brilliant tactical wizard. That has never been his calling card. So he needs to lean on his backroom staff for that. And I think the team really failed miserably in that regard. You know, people talk about the questionable back three formation, which is a bit of a conservative approach. I think we can debate whether this tactic really suited this current group of players. or whether they should not have made any adjustments mid-game against South Africa when they really needed a goal after going down 1-0. Because if you recall, Korea, all they needed was a draw against South Africa, and they would have been able to advance to the round of 32. And potentially we'll be talking about Korea versus Belgium in round of 32 right this moment, not, you know, discussing this fallout from the early elimination. So so there was a pretty disappointing ending. You know, I think you could also wonder if there was a buy-in from the players as far as what Hong was trying to do. You know, maybe the players tuned him out. You know, they know what's going on. You know, this negative vibe surrounding the team, surrounding the coach, this could not have helped the team. You know, this has been ongoing for the last 2 years, pretty much ever since Hong got hired. So, you know, maybe I think it's also fair to question whether the players really tuned him out at the worst possible time at the World Cup.
The early exit has prompted widespread anger at home. Head coach Oh Myung-bo's resignation has done little to quell this anger. Criticism of the Korea Football Association keeps mounting. Gio, what exactly, though, is the KFA being criticized for?
Yeah, so they went through this whole controversy 2 years ago when Hong was first brought on board for the second time anyway, back in July 2024. Now, the sort of the key issue is the fact that the KFA subjected foreign-born candidates to really rigorous screening vetting process during interviews, you know, asking them sort of do a presentation on their tactical philosophy and whatnot. But with Hong Myung-bo, you know, they simply sent somebody to ask Hong to please take the job. So it kind of seemed like, you know, somebody upstairs at the KFA wanted Hong in the first place, and they, you know, sent somebody out there to meet him and, you know, kind of pleaded with him so that he could become the next head coach. And a senior KFA official handling the process at the time, there was Lee Im-sang, the head of the technical director of the KFA at the time, admitted in media interviews later on that he never had a proper job interview with Hong. Hmm. So, you know, that sparked uproar that the KFA leadership, particularly the chairman, the president, Chung Mong-kyu, wanted Hong Myung-bo all along, and they really never went after other candidates all this seriously. You know, earlier in 2024, Hong Myung-bo was coaching a K-League club, Ulsan HD at the time. You know, they had won two straight championships. And he said, repeatedly, he said he didn't want the national team job. And he even said he was offended that they kept asking him to take the job because he didn't want it. But, you know, he ended up, you know, accepting the job for some reason. And here we are. He ended up stepping down for the second time in his national team coaching career. I mean, possibly for the last time.
So it sounds like there may have been concerns about the way in which Hong Myung-bo was named the head coach of the national team in the first place. Professor Kim, what's your view on South Korea's performance at this World Cup? And what do you think are the reasons for the disappointing results?
Well, disappointment is understatement. It's a soul-crushing and nationally embarrassing disaster. Finishing 34th in this expanded 48-team field is essentially the same as failing to qualify for the old 32-team tournament. It's the country's worst World Cup performance to date. And the reason, systematic mismanagement of KFA under President Chung Mong-kyu and disastrous coaching appointment of Hong Myung-bo following Klinsmann's firing has been widely cited as the primary catalyst for South Korea's worst performance. But I'd like to point out there's one political factor under the radar, which is why these known problems were not corrected in time, which is martial law. Chung Mong-kyu managed to secure a fourth term as KFA president, and a major reason for that was the political chaos following the December 3rd martial law in 2024. Before that happened, actually, he was facing very intense pressure from both public and the government to step down over the various controversies, including the poaching hire. But the impeachment crisis that followed completely shifted the nation's focus. Unfortunately, it created a political vacuum that essentially froze the government officials who were trying to stop his re-election. With the spotlight off of him, Chung was able to smoothly get approval to run and ended up winning by a landslide in February 2005. So we missed the opportunity to correct those problems in time.
So pretty strong words there from Professor Kim, soul-crushing embarrassment, the worst performance ever. Gio, you've been covering Korean sports for about two decades. During that time, what kind of problems or concerns have been raised about the KFA, maybe governance issues or transparency issues? What do you think are the biggest problems that the Korea Football Association faces today?
Yeah, you just touched upon the transparency issue, and as far as hiring home, or even before that, Jurgen Klinsmann, was it done right? Was it just one person, Jeong Mong-gyu, running the show, and everybody's just doing what they're told without really sticking to principles and regulations? Also, I think you kind of get a sense of sort of institutional arrogance, if you will, within the KFA. They seem to be kind of tone deaf. They seem to be kind of, not able to really read the room at times. Just 2 years ago, in response to the government probe into the whole process, the operations at the KFA, they came out and said, essentially, we know what we're doing and you don't. So who are you to tell us what to do when you don't know what's going on within our organization? So that was kind of their reaction in some. They're still locked in a legal battle with the sports ministry as we speak. And, there's also the criticism of having the old boy network, Jeong Mong-gyu and the whole Jeong family kind of having run the show for quite some time now with the KFA. So I think, there's a lot of, demand for a fresh face, a fresh leadership, at the top.
I can't remember a darker time for Korean football, but Professor Kim, what's your take regarding potential problems at the association, and how much merit does the criticism have, especially in light of what happened at the World Cup?
You're right. My take on the problems are pretty similar with Chiho, about opaque governance and centered decision-making and procedural breakdown and cartel allegation and also defiance of external oversight. But I do believe this criticism and the public attention, public and political backlash, including President Lee Jae-myung's calling for an investigation into the sports administration, actually hold very significant merit. In part, due to public criticism and pressure, Jeong Mong-gyu prepares to step down, and Hong Myung-bo already stepped down. So with the right public and political attention and support, I do believe transitioning to a system based on professional management and dispersed authority can be established.
Meanwhile, the Ministry of Culture, Sports, and Tourism announced Monday it will launch a special audit of the Korea Football Association. This is something that Gio touched on earlier. The Culture Minister, Choi Hui-young, said the ministry would form a investigative committee, including outside experts, to identify the causes of what he called the association's incompetence, mismanagement, and complacency. Professor Kim, what do you expect to come out of this audit, and is there a chance that there might not be anything huge?
First thing I can think of is fixing the election system. Crucially, the minister signaled that they are going to overhaul how the next KFA president is elected, and meaning the old guard won't be able to just use their existing internal bylaws to slide a hand-picked successor into power. And hopefully I hope that come out. And also a public whistleblower hotline can be made. So they are launching a direct tip line so the public insiders or whistleblowers can report any suspicious KFA operation safely. And also an independent task force and law enforcement backing, and maybe a public white paper can be published. So, of course, there is very real possibility that the audit might not be immediately trigger structural upheaval. Several systematic barriers could blunt the ultimate impact, and that include the PIPA field we all talk about, and legal stalling, and also, I'll say, the toothless recommendation. This audit open ended in non-binding suggestion allowing the KFA to just take the bad PR, make a few superficial tweaks, and keep the status quo. However, the bottom line is, I think it all depends on this time public attention and government will. So audit will be audit successful if the ministry can figure out how to force the actual binding reform without getting South Korea suspended by PIPA, and which I don't think really will be problematic.
There are, of course, the growing calls for an overhaul of the KFA that Professor Kim just mentioned. Jiho, what would be an ideal way to go about this? Are there football federations or associations abroad that South Korea can try to emulate? What can be done?
Yeah, so I think it's ultimately kind of naive to think that an organization as big as the KFA can be revamped over a short period of time. You know, like I said earlier, this is not a body that will simply wave the white flag and say, hey, you know what, we're just going to do what we're told. And Professor Kim just mentioned they could drag this all, you know, for a long time, you know, kind of pretend maybe they're doing something and then ended up really not doing much. I think we kind of saw that 2 years ago when there was an initial probe into their operations, and you know, they've managed to drag this on past the World Cup, really, with a protracted legal battle. Now, ideally, I think you would want to see a more transparent process with the hiring the national team coaches. You know, this is not new, by the way. You know, we've seen pretty extreme cases with the Klinsmann and Hong, as far as, you know, not getting the results in this result-based business. And, you know, I do think that these two really set Korean football back by several years, while other countries have raced past our program, namely Japan. You know, I think, you know, we like to think of ourselves as rivals to Japan in a lot of other sports, but, and I think in football right now, there's really no rivalry between these countries. Japan is so far ahead of us. And, you know, I think that there's nothing wrong with trying to learn from what they're doing right and how they've been able to build a program that, you know, nearly took down Brazil in the round of 32, potentially could have defeated Netherlands in the group stage as well. And, you know, I think if they somehow had ended up in Korea's group, they might have even won the group. So, so I think that's one program that I think Korea might do, you know, that could do worse than kind of trying to learn from Japan. Let's just put it that way.
Lots of things to learn, obviously, even from Japan, our hoped-for rival, I should say. Professor Kim, what needs to be done to revamp the KFA? Any specific actions, concrete plans that can be taken to improve the Korea Football Association? And more fundamentally, can the association be reformed?
I can think of a few fixes here. First, to hire a professional CEO as a president, we have to really move away from the model of conglomerate owners running the organization like a personal fiefdom. We need to elect a professional sports executive as president, someone whose sole full-time focus is running the KFA like a modern, accountable organization. And the second, train sports management experts, and they run the organization like KFA, sports organization. Now we cannot really simply rely on former athletes just to fill administrative roles without providing proper business acumen. We must systematically train them and integrate specialized sports management professionals to handle the complex marketing, legal, and strategy operation required at the international level. And also, we can think of clean up the hiring process. We talked about this a lot already. And lastly, I think this is more important than enough to talk about, restore the fan equity, because the KFA now has completely shattered its relationship with the public, and this is huge, and they need to stop hiding behind the closed door and communicate openly and start repairing that emotional attachment with the fans. And to your final question, yes, I am optimistic, but the reason being, due to the unprecedented failure and anger, there will be, I do believe, unprecedented external intervention. and like basically I pinned my hope on the external intervention and its strength, and by government and public pressure. So that follow election reform and financial leverage and forced transparency. So I am optimistic.
Professor Kim, again, is optimistic, despite, of course, his heated criticism today. Regardless of where you stand on this debate, I think we can all agree that it has been a PR disaster for the Korea Football Association. And an added element is a urgency, because a question mark now hangs over the 2027 AFC Asian Cup. This is set to take place from January 7th to February 5th next year. The Korea Football Association doesn't have a president, or won't have a president, and Team Korea has no head coach. Jung Mong-gyu, the incumbent KFA president, said he'd step down following the World Cup amid criticism over a lack of fairness and transparency in his leadership. He has led, of course, the association for 13 years. This is a point that our two experts have both mentioned. With both positions vacant, that is the presidency and the head coach job of the national team, what are some issues, Chi-ho, to watch out from here out on out? And how big of an impact could those vacancies have on Team Korea's preparations for the upcoming tournament?
Yeah, so this is a big leadership vacuum at Korean football. You know, no president of the national federation and no head coach for the top men's national team. Now, by the rules, they're going to have to elect the president within 60 days of Chung's formal departure, which will come after the World Cup final. So, you know, ideally, you would have the new president, you know, by the end of, I guess, by middle of September, potentially. And they're going to also have to fill the national team coaching vacancy. Now, for FIFA international match calendar, four matches can be scheduled between September 21st and October 6th. And two more between November 9th and 17th. So those are the upcoming match windows for the national teams across the world. You know, I think most likely, I think we're going to have a caretaker boss in charge. If not four matches in September, October, maybe all six of them coming up this year. It's going to be hard to try to find somebody who can replace Hong on a full-time basis in that short period of time. There's going to be a bit of a time crunch because I guess, you know, I suppose you're going to need the president first. Because he's going to have to authorize the hiring of the national team coach anyway. So you're going to have to hire the president first, elect the president first, and then try to go find someone who will take over the national team program. But I really cannot see how KFA will be able to find a new head coach for those upcoming friendly matches, which obviously is not ideal because, you know, even if they do hire somebody by maybe November, he would have maybe only a couple of months to prepare for the Asian Cup. And that's a tournament that Korea hasn't won since 1950s. So they've been trying to win that thing for many, many years. And it's going to be a tall task, I think, for the Korea to get it done, especially with how strong other Asian teams have really come along in recent years.
That is a somber note. We end today's in-depth news analysis segment with that was reporter Yoo Ji-ho from Yonhap News. Thank you, Ji-ho.
Thank you.
And also, we had Professor Kim Yoo-gyum from Seoul National University. Thank you, Professor Kim.
Oh, thank you for having me.
My name is Kanoa Hijepalmiano, winner of the junior and open men's categories at the Asian Surfing Championship. You are now listening to Korea 24 on KBS World Radio.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock Market Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index plunged 655.32 points, or 7.89%, on Thursday to close at 7,648.09. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ lost 62.63 points, or 6.74%, to close at 866.72. You can check Korean stock market updates at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next, we are joined by Daniel Che for our Korea Trending segment. For this part of the show, we check out some of the most viewed stories and issues covered by Korean news outlets and handpicked by the Korea 24 team. Hello, Daniel.
Hello there, Andrew.
So, what's our first story today?
Authorities issued a consumer safety alert for injectable medications, mainly those involving weight loss drugs, as there's been a surge in the number of reported safety and side effect cases.
Drugs may have side effects, of course, so that's why we should all consult our physicians before taking them, but tell us more.
The alert was issued by the Fair Trade Commission and Korea Consumer Agency on Thursday. So between January 2023 and this April, over 1,100 reports involving injectable medications were filed. The figures have nearly doubled in the span of a year, as there were 462 reports in 2025 compared to about 240 filed in 2024. While influenza shots accounted for the largest share, obesity medications trail close behind, making up over 18% of reported cases, and the figures have been rising particularly sharply.
What were some of the reported side effects or accidents from these drugs?
So they mostly involve adverse effects, including abdominal pain. That was the most common, accounting for about 59%, followed by vomiting at 25%. Taking up single-digit percentage were dizziness, tinnitus, and nausea.
And what are some of the factors that are driving this increase in these injections of weight loss drugs?
Well, the latest findings showed that 3 in 4 obesity drug-related incidents occurred at home or residential settings. Self-administering the shots at home comes with risks, as unlike being in the presence of medical professionals at healthcare facilities, doing it alone at home means one is less equipped to respond to emergencies. A KCA official said consumers should pay close attention to proper storage, dosage, and the recommended duration of use for injectable medications.
So probably the lesson is don't self-inject at home. Now moving on, what's our next story?
On Wednesday in Yangju, Gyeonggi Province, a resident of an apartment was shocked to run into a snake in the living room.
Snakes, of course, are not animals you find in your home every day, especially here in Korea in 2026. Was anyone hurt? How big or how long was this snake?
Fortunately, no one was hurt. And according to fire authorities on Thursday, the Black King snake found in the residence at around 10 p.m. Wednesday was more than 1 meter long. The resident who spotted the snake claims to have heard a strange sound under the blanket and checked to find it was a snake.
I'm scared of cockroaches, so I'm not going to feel too confident in front of snakes. So firefighters were called to the scene. What did they do?
The dispatch officials managed to capture the snake. They released it back into the wild to a stream where not a lot of people passes by. Fortunately, no person or snake was injured in the process. But the resident who found the snake was quite rattled, of course, due to the sudden unexpected encounter.
I actually read about this today, and I looked up the Black King snake, and I definitely would not want to meet that snake in my home. Obviously, must have been a very traumatic experience for the homeowner. Do we know how the snake ended up in that living room?
Well, despite this very majestic and threatening name, Black King snake is actually known to be kept as pets by some, so it's likely not from the wild. The shed skin of the snake could be found around the bathroom, so it appears it's a snake raised by a nearby resident that traveled through a toilet or drain pipe and ended up in that living room.
Hoping no one else finds uninvited snakes in their homes. But we now turn to our final story. What do you have, Dan?
The Busan International Fantastic Film Festival, or BFun, South Korea's largest genre film fest, is back. The 11-day event held in venues across Busan, west of Seoul, begins today.
This festival's been around for a while, I think 3 decades now. What can we expect in this year's edition?
Well, earlier in a press conference, actress Chang Mi-hee, chairperson of the BFun organizing committee, said this year's festival includes a diverse lineup of works and the largest scale ever, all so that viewers can experience the intrinsic power of cinema and build a deep emotional connection.
Okay, so how big is this year's scale?
So to mark BFun's 30th anniversary, it is screening a record number of films, a total of 321, 93 of them making their world premiere. Under the slogan, New Era, New Skin, the features and shorts hail from 50 countries. The opening film is iconic Hong Kong filmmaker Yuen Woo-ping's action period film Blades of the Guardian. It features celebrated martial artist and action star Jet Li.
Jet Li. So it's now the 30th anniversary. Any major changes in this year's event? New sections, perhaps?
Oh, yes, there's been a host of new sections added. Asian Genre Films 99, for starters, a three-year project to map the landscape of Asian genre cinema, plus a special section dedicated to French sci-fi films to mark the 140th anniversary of the establishment of diplomatic ties between South Korea and France.
And since AI is the thing now in almost every industry, I'm suspecting there were elements of AI being featured as well.
Yes, clearly they are openly embracing such advancements in this particular film fest. It's featuring more than 30 works incorporating AI tech in both international and non-competition sections. Not only that, the organizers also welcomed with open arms extended reality technology with a segment titled Beyond Reality, works that will provide a more immersive experience for visitors.
I'll be sure to check out Bucheon this weekend, but that's all we have for today's edition of Korea Trending. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, I'm Chang Ray Lee, author of Native Speaker. You are now listening to Korea 24 on KBS World Radio.
Time now for our weekly segment, Explore Korea, where we uncover the hidden stories and unique experiences that make Korea so special. Today, we are joined by a new explorer, Elena, another global ambassador to the Korea Heritage Agency. Welcome, Elena.
Hello. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm really delighted to be here.
We're definitely very happy to have you with us today. Before we dive into today's topic, however, could you give our listeners a short introduction of yourself?
Sure. My name is Erne Elena. I come from Moldova, a small country located in Eastern Europe between Romania and Ukraine. My interest in Korea actually started when I was around 10 years old while watching historical Korean K-dramas on TV, such as Jewel in the Palace and Dong-i. While watching, I became completely fascinated by Korean history, traditional culture, royal cuisine, and hanbok. And ever since then, I always dreamed of visiting Korea one day. So 5 years ago, that dream actually came true when I moved to Korea for my studies. And now, as a content creator, I create content introducing Korea's beautiful culture, traditions, and heritage to international audiences, which is something I genuinely enjoy and feel very passionate about.
That's a wonderful story. I hope Korea has been a safe and warm place so far for you. Elena, could you also tell us about the Korea Heritage Agency and your experience as a global ambassador?
Of course. So the agency promotes the values of Korea's national heritage through a wide range of programs and events and works to revitalize it for future generations. Thanks to the agency, I get special access to explore Korea's heritage once or twice a month, so I can experience it for myself and then share pictures or videos on social media. And I can share it with people around the world, kind of like I'm doing right now on the radio.
Great. I mean, so what special place will we be exploring today?
So today, I'm taking you to a place called Hanguge Chip, in English that would be Korea House, that offers a rich and immersive traditional culture experience right in the center of Seoul, and especially a program called Gohoje that is provided there.
I know Hanguge Chip. It's situated nicely next to the subway and in the center of Seoul. It's a great place to grab a fancy and tasty traditional Hanjik meal for those who haven't been. And I get the impression that many visitors are now becoming more interested in the more traditional aspects of Korean culture.
Absolutely, you're right. As you most probably know, there has been a growing interest among international tourists in Korean traditional tea culture, as well as traditional desserts and snacks. Many visitors now look beyond K-pop, K-drama, or shopping and want to experience the more traditional and historical side of Korea. I think that's why areas like Insadong and Iksongdong, known for their Hanok cafes and traditional refreshments, have become very popular destinations. Mm. But the place and the program that I'm introducing you today, I would say it offers a much more immersive cultural experience. So it's situated near Myeongdong, one of the busiest and most energetic areas of Seoul. It's just a few minutes walk away from Jungmuro Station. So once you're there, you suddenly step into a completely different atmosphere. Instead of the noise and crowds, you find yourself in a more quiet, intimate, and relaxing space that feels like a small escape, you know, from the fast pace of the city. That's where you'll find Korea House.
Myeongdong, Jungmuro Station. So those are very crowded places. But I would very much agree with the description about Korea House. It's a suddenly quiet and peaceful place. My family has celebrated a few birthdays there, actually. And the food, the serene setting that we've been just talking about. And I've also heard there's music. That all combines to create this soothing atmosphere. But Elena, tell our listeners more about this place.
Of course. Let me tell you about it. So Korea House opened in 1970.
A long time ago.
Yes, 57, as the official government reception hall of Korea. And today is a high-end cultural complex dedicated to preserving and promoting the beauty of Korean culture and traditions. So what you can do there, visitors can enjoy royal Korean fine dining and traditional refreshments inspired by Korean royal culture, royal cuisine, watch traditional performances, and even experience Korean traditional weddings. I also believe that Korea House gained even greater attention from international tourists and, of course, BTS fans.
BTS.
Yeah, after BTS held their 2018 Billboard cover photo shoot in front of the Nogumjeong Pavilion. Yeah, so right at the entrance of Korea House, there's also a lovely place called Cafe Sarang. It's a really nice spot where you can enjoy coffee or traditional Korean drinks and just take a short break during your visit. They also sell a variety of souvenirs and cultural goods which are inspired by Korea's natural heritage. So I think it's a great place to look around if you want to find something unique to take back home.
I wasn't aware of the BTS connection there, but obviously so much more to explore at Korea House. Let's now talk more about that program that you mentioned earlier, Gohoje. What is Gohoje?
So if someone wants to experience Korean traditional tea and desserts in a more special and immersive way, I would definitely recommend this program. So Gohoje is a premier royal court tea and sweets program operated within Korea House. The name actually carries the meaning of a house for those who love things of the past. One of the things that makes it special is that the traditional sweets and teas change every season. So every visit offers a slightly different experience. It also operates by reservation only, which is something that you have to remember. There are 4 time slots, starting at 11 a.m. and running at 2-hour intervals until 5 p.m. So each session lasts approximately 90 minutes with a limited number of guests, creating a calmer and more intimate atmosphere. Because of this, popular dates and time slots can sell out quite quickly. So, also, another thoughtful aspect is that the menu can also be adapted for guests with dietary restrictions or ingredients they avoid for religious or health-related reasons, as long as this is mentioned, you know, when making the reservation. Both traditional floor setting and table setting options are available, but, you know, for the 4 Korean traditional experience, I would personally recommend the traditional floor setting.
I think Elena mentioned reservation 3 or 4 times, so we're going to keep this in mind. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later. But the Gohoje sounds like a very good experience. Could you tell us more about the experience that you were just describing, and exactly what teas and desserts did you try?
Oh, I would love to. So after checking your reservation, the staff will guide you to your seat. Once you're sitting there, the very first tea served is the welcome tea. That would be the golden chrysanthemum tea.
궁극차.
Yes. The tea is offered to every guest who visits Goho-je, and this very first cup already conveys the kind of, you know, the hospitality that defines Goho-je. Yes, after this, I was invited to choose between their signature tea and seasonal tea, and I chose, of course, the signature tea. It's made with bamboo leaf, yuzu, and sweet osmanthus, which sounded really unique to me. It was my first time drinking both, but I really enjoyed them. In most of the, you know, the Hano cafes, the usually the available options are ginseng, jujube, plum, or omija tea. So the signature tea felt quite unique and refreshing, you know. Within just a few minutes, very fast, the tea and dessert set were served. And I really like that the staff, you know, kindly explained each tea and the traditional desserts in detail. The tea was very good and it paired very well with the sweets.
I was going to ask you about those sweets, which I really want to try. What were the sweets like?
Oh, so each sweet has a different texture and aroma. There's like a really, you know, enjoyable experience. The 90-minute setting time was more than enough, you know, to slow down and fully enjoy it. The traditional music, especially the kayagum sound in the background, made the atmosphere even more calming. The sweets that I enjoy the most are kukamsam, that would be the dried persimmon roll with walnut inside, and konmari hwajeob, the pan-fried rice pancake roll with the seasonal flour. They looked absolutely beautiful and were very delicious. You totally have to try them.
So they were the kukamsam and the konmari hwajeon. That sounds delicious. But that's it for today's Explore Korea. Thank you for introducing us to Hangukye Jip or Korea House today, Elena.
It was my pleasure.
And this is where we wrap up today's show. Again, you can always listen to Korea 24 on various apps, KBS Kong, KBS World Radio, and KBS World Radio on air at 7:10 p.m. Korea Standard Time every weekday. We'll be back tomorrow. I've been your host, Andrew Jung. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Did you know that Korea 24 is active on social media? You can do more than just listen to Korea 24. You can find out what the team has been up to on Korea 24's social media accounts. We are on Instagram on KBS_Korea24, where we post about our weekly segments from Monday's sports segment to Friday's movie spotlight. Sometimes we share snippets of the team's day behind the scenes so you can get to know us better. On YouTube, we upload filmed versions of our segments, and you can also check out what other language services have been up to. Find us on @KBS World Radio Service. Make the most of your Korea 24 experience by following us on social media.
KBS World Radio strives to promptly update our listeners on safety procedures during emergency situations. The following are recommended guidelines to follow in case of heavy rain. Before the rain hits, make sure your windows are sealed and check for any clogs in water drains nearby. During heavy rain, try to stay indoors and monitor the situation through your local news. If you are outdoors, stay clear of dangerous places such as lowlands, basements, and worn-down buildings. Do not approach streetlights, traffic lights, or utility poles as there is a possibility of electrocution. If you're driving, slow down to 60 to 80% of your normal speed and maintain a longer distance between cars in your lane. After the rain stops, ensure that your tap water has not been contaminated and is safe to use.
If your house has been flooded, make sure all the gas and electricity is off before entering and call an expert for a safety investigation. You can call your local government for repairs of sewages and roads. Please check our website at world.kbs.co.kr for up-to-date information and procedures.